Vaqueros were the most important workers in the Mission and Rancho eras, and some of the first vaqueros were Native American. Today we're going to talk more about these unique figures on the California frontier.
I'm Damian Bassage. Welcome to California Frontier.
What does vaquero mean? The word vaquero is usually translated as cowboy in English, and it literally means someone in charge of cows. It also gave rise to the word buckaroo, another name for cowboy in English. The vaquero was in charge of managing the cattle and horses of Spanish and Mexican California, and was the most important worker in the Mission and Rancho economy. The vaquero phenomenon is widespread all over Latin America. In Mexico, they are commonly known as charros, and the gaucho of Argentina and Paraguay is well known, as is the huaso of Chile. Wherever cattle were raised, vaqueros became important. The tradition of the vaquero probably originates in the horse culture that arrived in Spain from North Africa in the year 711 AD, when the Moors invaded across the Strait of Gibraltar. The Moors, who were Berber people, were horse-riding people, and they brought their horses and horse culture with them to the Iberian Peninsula, which soon became an integral part of life there. When Spanish conquistador Hernán Cortés and his men came to Mexico in 1519, they brought horses. And as the Spanish established their empire in the Americas, horses became an essential part of both agriculture and conquest. Very early on, Spanish horses came to what is today the southwestern U.S. When explorer Juan de Uñate established the first Spanish colony in what is today New Mexico in 1598, he and the settlers that came with him brought hundreds of horses. Now, it should be mentioned that recent studies have posited that perhaps horses were already in North America, but the best evidence we have to date is that they arrived, at least in modern times, with the Spanish. Horses probably came to Alta California in 1769. That year, Gaspar de Portola, governor of Baja California, led a land expedition north that eventually reached the San Francisco Bay. With him came 60 men, most of whom were leather jacket soldiers, or soldados de cuera, as they're known in Spanish, and they brought horses and mules. The Spanish soon established military presidios, or forts, in Alta California. The first was at San Diego in 1769. Because the need to raise and care for horses was great, the Presidio eventually had a ranch connected to it. This ranch was known as the King's Ranch, or Rancho del Rey in Spanish. The soldado de cuera was a skilled horseman, and Spanish soldiers learned at a very early age to ride. But the Presidio was a military base, so it didn't have the resources necessary to dedicate to large-scale livestock raising. It was the missions, under the direction of the Franciscan Padres, that really brought ranching life to Alta California. The missions were agricultural operations, managed, supported, cared for by the Native American communities that lived on them. Missions raised large numbers of cattle for their meat and hides. It was important to have trained workers with special skills in order to raise, breed, and manage livestock. So they needed vaqueros. The friars, the Franciscans, chose some of the Native Americans at the mission to be trained as vaqueros. They then learned to ride horses and to do everything involved in raising cattle. Whether the Franciscans themselves trained the Indians personally, it's not 100% clear, though, of course, the Franciscans were horsemen themselves. Not all Native Americans in North America adopted horses into their lifestyle, but most California Mission Indians took very well to horses. Those chosen to be vaqueros became renowned horsemen. And visitors to Alta California later would often comment on the great horsemanship of the Californian vaquero, both Indian and non-Indian. But horses are also a powerful weapon of war, and Spanish officials were opposed to giving Indians access to them. Horses could be used against the Spanish, as the Comanches had done in New Mexico and Texas very successfully. In fact, in 1787, the Spanish governor of both Californias, Pedro Fages, wrote to Father Fermín de Lasuen, president of the California missions. Fages warned Lasuen that Indians were forbidden to ride horses according to Spanish law. But Lasuen responded that there was no one else to do the job, and therefore Indians would have to handle the tasks of the vaqueros. For the rest of the Spanish era, mission vaqueros would be Native Americans. The vaqueros were among the most important members of the mission community. Because of the special skills they learned and the dangerous nature of their jobs, vaqueros earned very high status and prestige in their native communities. Because of their great responsibilities, the padres chose young men whom they considered to be the most trustworthy to be trained as vaqueros. Vaqueros were among the Indians who lived a lifestyle most like that of the Hispanic settlers, known as gente de razón. According to Father Lasuen, vaqueros received special clothing for their jobs. They were given trousers and boots, and where possible, and here I'm quoting, leather jackets, all made from buckskin, in addition to a hat and shoes, unquote. Who lived much of her life at Mission San Gabriel, said that there were generally two kinds of vaqueros, those who rode with a saddle and those who rode bareback. According to her, quote, those who rode bareback received nothing more than their shirt, blanket, and loincloth. Those who rode with saddles received the same clothing as the gente de razón. They were given a shirt, a vest, pants, a hat, boots, shoes, and spurs. They were given a saddle, a bridle, and a reata for their horse. In addition to saddle vaqueros and bareback vaqueros, they were sometimes divided into mission vaqueros and hill vaqueros. Many of the missions not only had their own livestock, but they also had more distant ranchos known as asistencias or estancias that were many miles away. These ranchos were more isolated, and the padres visited them only occasionally, maybe every couple of weeks or once a month. The native vaqueros who worked and lived at the asistencias were known as hill vaqueros. They had much less contact with the mission and probably lived a more traditional native lifestyle than the ones who lived on the mission. As the mission cattle herds grew, so also did the number of vaqueros. They were usually overseen by a ranch foreman known as the mayordomo del campo. According to Nazario Galindo, who grew up at Mission Santa Clara in the first decades of the 19th century, quote, there was also a mayordomo del campo who had 25 vaqueros, all Indians, under him, quote. The mayordomo del campo was usually an experienced cowman selected from among the gente de razón. While the vaquero's abilities gave him a privileged position at the mission, his life was very hard and involved a lot of different skilled activities. Vaqueros had to be young and able-bodied, and the average age of a mission vaquero was about 23 years old. Vaqueros had to break and train horses. They had to manage herds of cattle and move them from place to place. And they had to protect the livestock from predators, such as wolves and the well-known California grizzly bear. Vaquero work depended on the calendar, like most agricultural labors. February, March, and April were usually dedicated to rounding up cattle in the rodeo. At that time, the cattle would be castrated, earmarked, and branded, though this varied from mission to mission. Nazario Galindo recalled that at Mission Santa Clara, cattle were usually branded in June or July. The matanza, or slaughter, began in July or August. Because there were very few private ranchos before Mexican independence, most native vaqueros worked for the missions. As the rancho economy expanded through the trade in hides and tallow, The skills the vaqueros learned on the mission became even more valuable outside. With mission secularization, that is, the closing down of the missions, and the explosion of Mexican land grants, these vaqueros began to find work on private ranchos. At the ranchos, vaqueros often worked on a seasonal basis. Rancho owners would often bring on more vaqueros during the months of the rodeo and the matanza. Cash was not very common in Mexican California, so vaqueros were often paid with goods such as clothing, though some rancheros did pay their workers in cash. Throughout the 19th century, Native Americans continued to work as vaqueros all over California. For many of them, maintaining the vaquero lifestyle was also a way to preserve their native heritage. Author Arnold Rojas was a vaquero who chronicled his life and the life of other California vaqueros into the 20th century. And according to him, expert horsemanship was often associated with native heritage. In Rojas's words, quote, "When some vaquero had performed his work with great skill, the other men would look at each other, smile approvingly, and say, 'Se crió entre los indios,' in English, well, he was brought up among Indians." If you'd like to learn more about Native American vaqueros on the California frontier, there are a few books that can be helpful. Arnold Rojas's books, These Were the Vaqueros, his collected works, is an excellent place to start. There are a number of more scholarly works, including George Harwood Phillips' Vineyards and Vaqueros, Indian Labor and the Economic Expansion of Southern California, and Stephen Silliman's Lost Laborers in Colonial California, Native Americans and the Archaeology of Rancho Petaluma. And there are some other articles that I will have linked at the bottom of the show notes or the article on californiafrontier.net. And you can follow up with those in order to satisfy your curiosity. One last note, I've gotten messages from listeners telling me they really enjoy this podcast and it brings them great pleasure and piques their curiosity about California history. And they've asked how to be able to help support the show. As I always mention at the end, you can click on the show notes where it says support the show, and that'll allow you to make a monthly subscription for a small amount. There's also another way which you can do a one-time donation, which is called Buy Me a Coffee. And it's a link that is on the California Frontier website. You just click there and it'll allow you to buy a virtual coffee for the show for $5. You can buy more than one, obviously. Some people have bought multiples, and thank you so much for that. And it just allows us to help cover the costs of hosting the show and equipment and so on. So that is another way that you can do that, called Buy Me a Coffee. Finally, if you know someone who is a teacher or a homeschool parent, or if you yourself are a teacher or homeschool parent whose child is learning about California history, say in fourth grade, you can tell them about or learn about CaliforniaHistoryTeachers.com, which is a full year-long curriculum subscription for California history. And it hits all the state standards for fourth grade California history and social studies. And there's also a full set of lessons and short videos and quizzes and all the things you need to teach a class, whether for homeschool, whether for elementary school, that will cover all the state standards and have everything you need for fourth grade. So if you or somebody you know might be interested, go to CaliforniaHistoryTeachers.com. So once again, thank you so much, and look forward to the next episode of the California Frontier Show. This is the California Frontier Show. If you would like to know more about the California Frontier Project, visit californiafrontier.net. If you would like to support the show, scroll down in the show notes and click Support the Show. Then be sure to tell all your friends about the podcast. If you would like to connect with me, the host, send me an email at damian@californiafrontier.net.